Welcome to the Fresh Heart Project. Today I am delighted to welcome Dr. Chloe Selwood. Chloe is the Deputy Head of Emergency Preparedness, Resilience and Response for NHS England and NHS Improvement for London. She is an academic expert in pandemic influenza and she's authored many books, articles and papers on this topic. Over the past year, she has been heavily involved in the response to COVID-19 in the capital. She has also been integral to the response to the terror attacks, the cyber attack, and the tragic Grenfell Tower fire in London in 2017. Chloe is a keen runner. Not only has she completed marathons, but she's also run 100-mile races and multi-day events. In February 2019, midway through a month-long running challenge, Chloe had a cardiac arrest. She was successfully resuscitated and discovered that she had been born with a congenital heart abnormality. Chloe had open heart surgery and had an implantable cardioverter defibrillator, or an ICD, inserted. She's here today to talk about her journey. Chloe, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Chloe, I want to start by thanking you for all the incredible hard work that you're doing behind the scenes to keep us and our country safe. Thank you. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you. And likewise.
You have an incredibly impressive biography, but not only that, you're an extremely accomplished runner. Can you take us back to pre-2019? What was life like for you at that point?
Oh, that's a great question. So I was having a pretty good work-life balance, I would say. Work hard, play hard. Love my job, love what the work I do in London, working with the NHS and other partners, but equally was loving running so much. And during 2017 and 2018, I'd done some pretty amazing running challenges, some organised events, so some 50-mile and 100-mile events. But we'd also run, me and my husband had run the Camino de Santiago in Spain, so 500 miles along the top of northern Spain, which we just did ourselves for a holiday. So yeah, life was, I guess, normal, if you can call 500 mile runs normal.
And Chloe, it was February 2019, wasn't it, that you started the very unfortunately titled Run Till You Drop challenge. What did that involve?
So Run Till You Drop is a Facebook community group. It runs every February. And on the 1st of February, you run 1 mile or 1 kilometre. On the 2nd, you run 2 miles or 2 kilometres. All the way up to the end of the month when you're doing 25, 26, 27, 28. On sequential days. And it's a really supportive community, people all over the world sharing their experiences. I do kilometres rather than miles. But I'd done it the previous year and really, really enjoyed it. And so thought I'd try again in 2019.
So it was midway through that your life changed. Can you remember the actual day of the arrest? How are you feeling getting up that morning, getting ready for your challenge, getting ready for the day?
So yeah, it kind of happened over a few days leading up to the arrest. So on the day of the 19th, I'd done my run in the morning, had a day off, met a friend, and I just collapsed, had what I thought was a faint whilst we were shopping. Didn't really think anything of it, assumed I was just tired from running. Did my 20 kilometres on the 20th. On the 21st, I did 10 kilometres in the morning, intending to do the 11 going home. And went for lunch with some friends and again had another collapse. And because I work for NHS England with a lot of variously qualified medics and nurses, one of them saw me and dispatched me pretty quickly to St Thomas's, which was just around the corner from the office. And they chose to admit me overnight for observations, which meant that really luckily, when I had my arrest the next morning, I was in exactly the right place to do it.
Chloe, when I speak to patients who've had cardiac arrests, Often the actual event itself is quite hazy, and the memory of it is quite distant or not very strong. Do you remember that event at all? Do you remember what happened?
So I remember my husband had come in to see me in the morning, and he was sitting next to the bed, and I was sitting up talking with him, and I said, "Ooh, I think I'm going to because I felt like I was going to faint again." And I remember, I think, falling backwards and hitting the bed. He says everyone was running towards me as I was falling. And the next thing I remember is a nurse holding my hand and my chest really hurting. And so that was probably about half an hour, I understand, between hitting the bed and waking up. And then they brought him back in, and slowly I understood what had happened.
Firstly, what did your husband say to you after the event? And then what else did the doctors and the nurses say to you after the event?
My husband was really shaken up, I think, to have actually witnessed it. And in that initial kind of immediacy, I don't think either of us really understood the seriousness of what had happened. And it certainly took a good 24 hours, really, I think, for us both to understand quite how both serious and lucky I was that I was there when it happened. And the clinicians, the nurses, everyone on the ward was so supportive about answering my questions and translating for me.
Chloe, did you find it helpful or not very helpful to know people within the NHS and to have those contacts?
I think personally, I found it really helpful. I found it really reassuring. It was quite funny. Whilst I was in hospital for quite a long time in the end, and various quite senior people from the trust would come and visit me, and you could see the ward staff looking slightly anxious at why various people were coming in and why they were coming to see me and things like that. And at one point, the regional chief operating officer was threatening to come and visit me. And apart from the fact I didn't want to see him in my pyjamas, I explained that might be a touch too far for the ward to deal with. But no, I certainly found it really helpful having access to clinicians who I trusted and who I thought I could ask questions of and who answered them.
Yeah, that's so important, isn't it? It's important to, you know, in that particular event with a life-changing scenario such as yourself, to have that trust in, you know, the people that are looking after you. I'm really, really pleased that you had that. After that, how long did it take to diagnose the actual cause of the cardiac arrest?
It took quite a while. We went through a variety of different options. So because I had no history, I think I got every single test that was going, and I went in all sorts of different interesting machines and had all sorts of different things kind of injected into me and strapped to me and so forth. So I'm a scientist by background, so it was fascinating from that perspective. But I would say it was probably about 3 weeks until they really worked out I had this anomaly with one of my cardiac arteries. And they'd actually prepped me to go down to surgery that morning to just have a defib fitted, a pacemaker fitted. I had the drawing on my arm to make sure it went in the right half of me. And from what I understand, the adult congenital team kind of interjected and said, "We think we need some more conversations. We think we've seen something." And then a week or so later, I had the surgery.
Goodness, you know, we always have such a sense of invincibility about us, don't we? And you've done such incredible things. I mean, running the Camino de Santiago, doing that 500 mile stretch alongside marathons and multi-day events. How did you navigate the process of finding out that you've done all those incredible things and you've done them with having this congenital heart defect?
So I made quite an early decision when I was admitted and realised I was in for quite a long time to accept it, I think. There was nothing I could have changed diet-wise or health-wise or activity-wise that would have prevented this event occurring, because it was genetic. It was a major plumbing defect. And the fact that I was so fit, I had done all of this running, meant that it hadn't happened sooner. And I think as well, being scientifically trained, it helped me, again, frame questions and want to understand it. So it wasn't that I dissociated from myself, but I took it as a real learning opportunity. And I'd never really been in hospital before or had any kind of interventions before. And so being a patient in itself was fascinating. So I think I just took a decision quite early on to try and be positive about it and learn from it and just take what I could. And also I wanted to be someone people wanted to come and visit. So I didn't want to be that kind of, didn't want to be negative, I guess.
It's amazing that you had such a positive outlook firstly, but also you had that scientific mindset as well that almost, you know, allowed you to take a bit more of a scientific approach and not so much of a, oh gosh, what's happened? Is it my fault approach, which can be quite natural at those sorts of points. Now, for listeners who are wondering what an anomalous coronary artery is, the heart has two main blood vessels or arteries that supply the muscle of the heart, the left and the right. The left then branches off into two other main branches, and they have typical origins and they have typical courses or pathways. And if those origins are different or if those pathways are different, then they're called anomalous coronary arteries. And some routes or origins are more problematic, and they can sadly lead to experiences such as Chloe's, but treatment is really individualized for each patient. And Chloe, you went from enjoying your running, loving work, to needing open heart surgery. It must have taken you completely by surprise. What was going through your mind?
So it was a huge surprise because after the arrest happened, all of the time I was in hospital leading up to the surgery, I felt fine and I was itching to be allowed to go home. I very naughtily had my work laptop brought in so I could do some emails from my bed. And it did take a while to kind of tie the two together. And I do remember having conversations with various clinicians, nurses, consultants, and just saying, so when can I run again? When can I get out? Because I've got events coming up this summer that I need to participate in. And I remember one of them just looking at me going, you're never going to even do 5K again, let alone a marathon. And I was just like, no, that's not happening. We need to think about this. And so because I'd started from a level of fitness, I was convinced, obsessed, determined to get back to as close as I could to that, I guess.
That must have been really difficult to hear, that your passion, your running, you may not get back to. Did you prepare yourself mentally for that eventuality if it were to occur, or was your mindset that, no, I am going to get back to it?
It was a bit of both, I think. So I accepted that the clinicians knew more than I did about my condition. And so I was very happy to listen to them, but I wanted to be part of the discussion and I wanted it to be about me as well as about my condition and about the life that I wanted to have afterwards. And so whilst I absolutely bucked that I would do more than 5K, I would absolutely do longer distances, I'm very happy that I'm a middle to back of pack runner anyway. And so I'm never going to win. I'm very comfortable with that. And so I'd accepted that maybe I wouldn't get back to 100 milers, but I'd get back to marathons, or maybe I wouldn't get back to doing 50 miles in one go, but I could do 50 miles over a couple of days or something. So that was the balance I made with myself.
And then you had the operation. And then after that, you then had an implantable cardioverter defibrillator, or an ICD, implanted. And for listeners, an ICD is a small device and it monitors the heart for abnormal, dangerous heart rhythms. And if it detects them, then it can deliver a shock. And the goal is to prevent sudden cardiac death. And Chloe, you had a subcutaneous one fitted, didn't you? Which is, it doesn't involve any wires in the heart. It sits outside the heart, just within the chest wall. In my experience, people who have ICDs or have been advised to have ICDs have very different outlooks and experiences. And no one is right or wrong. They're just very different. And some people don't want one. Others feel like it's a bit of an insurance policy. What has been your experience of needing an ICD and then of actually then living with an ICD?
It's a great question. I I initially did not want one at all. I wanted to believe that the surgery would fix it, and that correcting my arteries was it done. But I had a number of conversations with a multidisciplinary team, and because I wanted to get back to doing distance running, ideally trail running in the countryside, not in a city, recognised actually to have the life that I wanted, this was going to be part of it. And my husband was part of those conversations as well. He runs, we run together. And I felt I had to listen to his views as well, and wanted to make sure he was comfortable doing what we do together and being able to do those long runs. And so it was a jointly reached decision, I think. I mean, myself, my husband, and with the multidisciplinary team.
And what has living with the ICD been like since then? Have you had any issues, or is it fairly comfortable? What's it like?
So most of the time I completely forget it's there. It's just under the side, on the left-hand side. It does stick out a little bit, but it doesn't hurt. It hasn't had to fire or do anything, which is brilliant. It downloads into its box once a week and sends it off to the hospital, and they can look at the data, and they're very happy with it. I sometimes put folders underneath my arm because I forget it's there. And then I remember it's there. I'll roll over onto it when I'm asleep or sitting on the sofa or something. It doesn't hurt. It's just like if there was a book or a phone or something, I guess. So yeah, it's minimally impactful. Just need to be aware that it's there and not put like a phone particularly near it or anything that might interfere with it.
Chloe, you wrote a brilliant article in the British Medical Journal about your experience. And actually, that's what prompted me to get you on the show. You said your biggest concern throughout was being able to return to running. What was your physical recovery like?
So I had about 6.5 weeks in hospital, I think, from the admission, had the arrest, then had the open heart surgery. A couple of weeks later, I had the ICD fitted. And that was probably the least active period of my whole life. I wasn't allowed to leave the ward most of the time because I was wired up and they were monitoring me. And during my kind of time in hospital, I set an alarm on my phone. So every hour I get up, I walk the length of the ward and come back again just to have some mobility. Then when I got home, the first morning, I was really excited, and it's like, oh, we can walk down to the cafe. I can have a coffee. It'll be lovely. And I was like a little old lady trying to walk down the 400 meters or so down my street to my local cafe. And that was quite an eye-opener. I was genuinely surprised at how hard that was to do, because I didn't anticipate that.
You then built yourself up to doing the NHS Couch to 5K, didn't you? How long did it take? How did you feel at the end of it?
I had a really good experience with the formal cardiac rehab team at St Thomas's, and had, an interview, an assessment before I joined the programme, and set out goals and did the bleep test to look at baseline fitness and that sort of stuff. And I was probably one of the younger people in the group and probably one of the fitter people in the group from my baseline. And very early on said to them that I was going to be doing Couch to 5K alongside it, and was that okay? And they were a little bit like, ah, and then said, yes, take it sensible, keep talking with us. And they were really supportive. And I think for me, the combination of the structured rehab sessions in a safe environment, using a running machine for fast walking, using the exercise bike and so forth, coupled then with doing something I was really familiar with and comfortable with in my local environment, just worked really well together. And I think it was towards the end of July, so maybe a few months after I was discharged, 3 or 4 months after I was discharged, I took part in a 10K race, which they supported. They were okay with, but we did discuss what my goals were in that race, and it was to finish, nothing more than that.
That's wonderful. And thank you for also mentioning the importance of cardiac rehabilitation in your journey. Often it's cardiac rehabilitation is brilliant. It improves outcomes on all levels. And sometimes it's not that well taken up after cardiac events or cardiac operations. And so it's really important that you had a positive experience. I'm really pleased that you mentioned that. Thank you. Now, if it's okay with you, I'm going to read a quote from your article, Experiencing Pumphead. Despite the improvements in my physical health, I found that work was becoming harder as the weeks passed. I was becoming increasingly short-tempered, frustrated, and intolerant of others. I started to realise that I was struggling with my short-term memory. I would have a conversation with someone, often forgetting who I had spoken to about a topic or what I had said to a particular individual. I didn't recall this being discussed as a side effect of my cardiac arrest, so I started to worry. Now, I would like to say that reading this was a real practice-changing moment for me, because for one thing, I had never heard of the term pumphead. And secondly, I realised that I see a lot of patients on my ward rounds who are waiting for surgery, and I do address the physical aspect of it, but I don't always address the emotional recovery. And I want to really thank you for writing this, because for me it became crystal clear how important that is. And at that point, when you were having those experiences, what steps did you take to then understand what was going on?
It was interesting because I was so focused on getting my physical fitness back and hadn't really thought there might be any other kind of side effects or anything I would need to work with or kind of re-skill my brain and my thinking. And I did a structured return to work during July and August, phased return. And then returns kind of full time, and I was just struggling with things and just getting really short tempered with myself, with other people, and silly things. I kept muddling up strawberries and tomatoes, which is just, it's really funny, but also really frustrating because I would just keep doing it. And I joined a Facebook community called Cardiac Athletes quite soon after I'd left hospital. Another very long distance runner friend of mine, I'd shared my recent experiences on Facebook, and she put direct messaged me and just said, oh, she had a condition, which I had no idea about, why would I? And she'd recommended this group, which I joined. And Cardiac Athletes is an incredibly supportive group. It's a mixture of clinicians all around the world, people like myself who've had various issues, and it's just really, really supportive. And so I put in a question about, oh, this is all happening to me, I don't understand it, anyone else? And loads of people just came back and shared their experience of having had similar kind of cognitive issues and challenges with remembering things. And I just then did a little bit more research and found out that this thing called Pumphead exists, and it's not unusual, and it's recoverable. Massively reassured after doing a bit of research.
I find that fascinating, and it really highlights how social media, when used well, can be so powerful, because we hear so much about the negative aspects of social media and how it can affect your mental health. But for you, it's been a really positive experience. How important has that Facebook group and social media been in your recovery?
I would say Cardiac Athletes as a group is, I don't know that I would have done it without them, to be honest. There's such a positive, welcoming, supportive community. The mix of clinical expertise, lived experiences from all over the world, largely Western, I would say, but everywhere. Completely different sorts of cardiac journeys, people of different ages in different stages. It's just such a supportive group. And I really, really value having found it, and I can now comment back on other people with my experience and share my journey and help others. And you kind of, in the way of social media, build relationships with these people you've never met, but can support them. And yeah, it's just such a great group. So for me, it's one of the nicest places within the social media environment, I think.
Did you have any other support mechanisms, obviously from your husband, your family? What other support mechanisms helped you around that time?
Absolutely. My husband and my family were amazing. When I was in hospital, my husband would come and visit me every day. He'd run to the hospital and see me in the morning and then run on to work. My colleagues from work as well worked out a little rota, so the office isn't far from the hospital, so one of them would always come and see me as well, so had some really great support there from friends, and just the running community, actually. The UK 100 mile 50 mile community is not that massive, so a lot of us are in the same kind of, again, Facebook groups and just seeing what's going on and commenting on other people and just staying involved, I think, really helped. And local coffee shops, being able to go for a coffee.
Hopefully we can get back to that soon. Fingers crossed. Chloe, if you could go back to just after the arrest and before the operation, what advice would you give yourself?
That's a really, really good question, and I've not thought about that. I think just to be comfortable and confident it's going to be okay. Accept that you're in the right place with the right people. They have got your best interests at heart. They might not understand the running thing, but the rest of it's all okay.
And as a completely selfish aside, as a doctor, what advice would you have wanted to hear from me, in addition to everything that you had already received?
I think it would have been about the kind of the emotional and cognitive, the potential for those challenges. It just completely came out of left field and was not expecting it. If we did talk about it in hospital, it got lost in everything else that we spoke about, and with the focus on physical recovery, which is absolutely right. So I think maybe that, but yeah, just answer the questions that your patients ask you. And if they don't get it first time, try and help them to understand whatever it is that they're asking. With a scientific background, I could kind of work out how to frame the questions, but I think a lot of people don't have that background to be able to work out what it is they're trying to ask.
Thank you. That's incredibly helpful. And certainly it's something that I will be taking forward into my practice. And as you were beginning to recover from the surgery, the arrest and the ICD, what do you now wish you had known then that you know now?
I guess it's that my life is completely different, but not different at all. So I've had this quite significant surgery. I've got this device inside me. But I can still do really long runs. I'm still back of the pack, so it hasn't made me faster, despite what my nephews were hoping. And I can still do what I want to do, albeit maybe a bit slower. I did a 100-mile challenge over a week in the summer with one of the running groups, and that was wonderful to be able to do that. So maybe I will get back to 100-mile events at some point. From my perspective, making an early decision to be positive really worked for me. Making a decision to ask questions and to be part of the decisions about me and to drive my own outcomes.
That's amazing, Chloe. It really is. It truly is amazing. And I want to ask if it may not have done, but has this experience changed your outlook on life?
I think it has in a couple of ways. So I think I am probably kinder to myself than I was before. I'm a bit of a hurry up, complete a finisher type person. And I think recognizing the cognitive challenges that I had and still have to some degree, I am kinder to myself now. And I think that's translated to being kinder and more understanding of other people as well. And yeah, I've accepted I'm never going to win a 100-mile race unless I'm the only person in it.
Chloe, what does the future hold for you now? What are you excited about?
Oh, gosh, so much. I'm excited about the coffee shop opening again at some point. But longer term, just excited to get out there and my kind of memory and everything to come back and continue developing in my role and continue working in the NHS and with the NHS, doing what I do and what I love. Really excited, though, to just as the weather's getting better, to get out there and get running on some beautiful trails in beautiful parts of the country, and hopefully maybe go and run in Spain again at some point. Who knows?
Oh, Chloe, thank you so much. You are an inspiration. You know, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for coming on the show and being so generous with your story. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're incredibly grateful to Chloe for being so generous with her story. If someone you know could find it helpful, then please do share this episode. You can check out all the episodes on our website, www.freshheartproject.com. We would be really grateful if you could comment, subscribe, and give this a 5-star rating. This helps us get the Fresh Heart message to more people. The content of this episode is not a substitute for medical advice from your healthcare professional. Remember, be kind to yourself, and small, sustainable steps create great change. This podcast is produced by Lion Mountain Entertainment, a subsidiary of Morgan Archway Limited.